I'm going to give you a little bit of background, and I'm going to actually go a little bit into next week's Torah portion as well. I was reading Rabbi Sacks, and he said, what is the purpose of Genesis? Because in Genesis, there aren't any laws. They're just stories. Why isn't it just a five-page genealogy and move on to the laws? According to Sacks, the first thing is we need context. People need context in order to behave well. So the first part of it, of course, is that he created the universe. And the important part about that, besides the fact that he created it, is that he said it was good. And there has been a whole lot of heresies over the centuries that say it's bad. In fact, the dominant one that's going on right now in the United States today says that the creation is evil. The other thing is that he made us in his image. We're not just sort of a random clump of cells, but we are created in the image of our Creator, and that he wants to have a relationship with us. The other thing that happens, of course, we have freedom and the ability to choose good and evil. And one of the things that Genesis teaches us is those choices matter. We, with our freedom, get to make choices, but then we have to live with those choices. God doesn't just come along and smooth everything over with a trowel and say, there, there, there. You did it wrong, do it again. So the first 12 chapters of Genesis are this context that I've been talking about. From 13 to 50, the rest of Genesis are nothing but stories. What they do is they tell us what our heritage is. They tell us where we came from, both Jews and Christian. The fact that the Jews are all children of Abraham is pretty obvious, but Christians also have the same heritage. And so we need to understand the heritage and where we came from. The other thing that these stories do is they expand on the character of God. Because God periodically interacts with, especially the patriarchs, and what we see from that is his character. In order to be fully human, you really have to know who you are. That may sound foolish, but it's not. In order to be free, you need context, and in order to worship, you need context. You could have some random idol where people beat you over the head and say, bow down. But that's not the kind of worship God wants. God wants a worship based on a relationship with him. In order to do that, you have to have some context. Who you are is a function of where you come from. So all of this context we have gotten back in Genesis is by way of providing us context for our lives. You're all born in a family. You're all heirs to the Western tradition. You're all heirs of Christianity. All of those things are shaping who you are. One of the things that is another heresy that's very popular these days, it was extremely popular when I was younger, the idea that human beings are a blank slate and you can do anything with them, they're plastic. That's not true. It is, in fact, incorrect. Children are not a blank slate. People are not a blank slate. We are a product of our heritage, and there's no way around that. So what we're seeing in today's Torah portion is the story of Jacob. Now, at this point, by the way, we have all the major players. We've got Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We've got Jacob's sons. We've got, we're missing one yet. Benjamin will be born next week. But other than that, we've got all the major players. And especially we've got the three major players in Hebrew history, and that is Joseph, Judah, and Levi. I mean, everybody else is there, but those are the three main players for the rest of the book. So we've seen all that. Now, what we want to look at is Jacob's story here and figure out what it is we should be learning about that. Now, the first thing is I think Jacob gets a bad rap. I have heard countless Christian preachers preach on what a jerk Jacob is. We all like Abraham and Isaac, we don't know much about, but we like him too because he's a type of the Christ. But Jacob, I mean, this guy is sneaky, conniving, and everything else, and they just go on and on. What I'm going to suggest to you is the story today is about the transformation of Jacob from sort of a self-centered, conniving guy to a really fine man. Now, in case you hadn't noticed, there is a major chiasm going on here. It starts off with steals his brother's blessing, decides to flee, gets a blessing from his father, and then meets some angels, the latter. So at the end of today's Torah portion, he decides to flee, running away from Laban. He will get a blessing from his father-in-law. Father-in-law did not intend to give him a blessing when he started out, but God changed the father-in-law, Laban's mind, and so he winds up giving them a blessing. Then he's going to meet angels again at Mahanaim. And the last thing he's going to do, but that's next week, is he is going to return the blessing that he stole. So it starts with him stealing a blessing, and at the end of the chiasm, he is going to return that blessing. And one of the things that he does is he returns the blessing that I will suggest at plus 20%. He comes back and he bows down before his brother and says to him, "I am your servant." Well, he stole the blessing that was going to make Esau the master and him the servant, right? So he gives that back. He gives back the stuff that he made. Now, Esau is going to take some convincing. So you'll read that next week. But the point is here, Jacob starts off as someone who steals his brother's blessing and decides to run. And he comes back and he gives the blessing back. And oh, by the way, one of the things that will happen next week is he'll have the wrestling match with the angel. And the result of that wrestling match is he's going to get his hip thrown out of joint. Running is no longer an option. His modus operandi has been when things get really tough, he flees. So he flees from his brother to go up to Haran, and then he flees from Laban in order to get back to his own country. So then he's confronted with his brother who is coming up from the south with a battalion, and his instinct would be to flee again. The angel makes that impossible. So you don't get to flee anymore. So now let's look at what happens in the middle here. One of the things that happens here is a character change. Now, that's important for us because remember I said who you are is a function of your heritage. However, and I also said you're not a blank slate, you are able to change your character. And that's what this story shows. As he goes up to Laban, the first lesson he gets is about the firstborn. He serves his uncle for 7 years in order to get his bride. And he wants Rachel. I don't know what the problem is with Leah. It just says her eyes are weak. But so when Laban tricks him and gives him the wife he was not expecting, then Laban says, "In our land, we respect the rights of the firstborn." Ding. So that's lesson number one that he gets. The right of the firstborn is really important. And the fact that you stole that from your brother is a big deal. The second thing, he learns lessons in leadership. Remember when their boys are born, it says that Jacob is a man of the tenth, Esau is a man of the field. Well, where is he for 20 years with Laban? He's in the field. He's wrestling sheep. He's doing all of the things that a shepherd has to do. And when he's complaining to his father-in-law, he says, "I was out there in the heat and the cold. I was taking really good care of your flocks. You didn't lose anything while I was caring for your flocks because I bore the loss of anything that was lost. And you have cheated me 10 times. Oh, so he learns what it's like to be cheated. What he's learning here, 20 years becoming a man of the field, if you will, as opposed to a man of the tents, you know, a homebody that sits and cooks stew and studies. He has become a man of the field, which is what Esau was. He also now knows how it feels to be cheated, and he understands now why his brother is so angry with him, because it's now all happened to him. He also gets a supernatural blessing. So as he's working through this process of changing his character, and changing his character, by the way, is not something he set out to do. That's something that God has put him in circumstances where his character had to change. So one of the lessons here is if you have a character that you're not pleased with, it is possible to change it. And that's what we talk about, for example, in the Musar course. How do you go about doing that? How do you go about getting from where you are, which you're perhaps, not entirely pleased with, to something that is more pleasing to you and to God? And there's a process for that. So this character change thing happens three times. First time it happens to Jacob. The next time it happens to Joseph. Because Joseph, before he gets sent to Egypt, is sort of a typical 18-year-old favored son, daddy's pet, who is kind of a little snot, quite frankly. After he gets run through the Egyptian system for a while, he raises the place where he is now viceroy of Egypt, and he is very competent. And he is very understanding. And so his character has also been changed. The third one is Judah. Judah's character gets changed as well. And so what we have with Judah is jealous of his brother, Joseph. And when the brothers jump him and decide to kill him, he said, no, let's don't do that. Let's sell him into slavery. So he's willing to sell his brother into slavery. Well, there's a process by which he changes. It has to do with Tamar, where he has the opportunity to deny the child that he has conceived with the widow of his two older sons. And he steps up and doesn't do that. The next thing he has is the opportunity to leave Benjamin in Egypt and go back to dad and say, yeah, we did our best, but now not only is Joseph gone, but Benjamin's gone too. Sorry about that, dad. He steps up and he says, no, I've promised my father Benjamin would come home. You take me, send Benjamin home. So what you see is character transformations in these three men. And that's the basic story, if you will, of Genesis. How these three men have their character changed into something, in all cases, far more pleasing to God. And they become far better people. The other thing that this section of Genesis teaches, and in fact the rest of Genesis teaches, is faith. These three men that we're talking about, Jacob, Joseph, Judah, all depend on God as they move through these various trials. So God has not just said, all right, there you go. We'll see you in 20 years after you've been in prison in Egypt for a while to see what happens. No. God works with him during that process, blesses him, gives him opportunities to prove that he is competent, which he does, gives him dreams to keep him encouraged. So through all of this process, God is working with these three men to turn them into something that is more pleasing to him and more admirable to us. So at the end, Jacob voluntarily returns the blessing to his brother. There is no place in here where God says, all right, now, go on back, reconcile with your brother, give him the blessing back, and we'll work through you. That is not in the scriptures. The decision to return the blessing and to reconcile with his brothers is his, because his brother is living over in Edom, the other side of the Jordan. He can easily come back, which he does, and go down through Shechem and get back to his father and look across there at his brother and say, "Ah, nice to have known you." But he doesn't, because his character has been changed. So, what does that have to do with us? I would suggest a great deal. One of the things that's going on in this country right now is the context of our lives is being systematically destroyed. The renaming of things, the destruction of statues, all of that kind of stuff is a deliberate destruction of our context. And context is, as I said, really important. I saw a meme that I laughed at. Disney, of course, has gone completely off the rail. And there's this meme with 6 or 7 black Labrador retrievers. And the caption is, "Disney is going to remake 101 Dalmatians." What that is the destruction of context. We all came from somewhere. Jacob, in his past, has got some stuff that he is not proud of by the time we get to the end of this story. He realizes what he's done. He's not proud of it, but he goes and he corrects it. He doesn't try and erase it. What the West is trying to do is not correct any faults that we have, and we have lots of faults, just like everybody else. What we're trying to do is erase it, and that's a mistake. Because what you've done then is you have cut your context and your culture out from under you, and at that point, the people who think that we are a blank slate come in and try and give you another culture that is more to their liking. So, study your history, study your culture. Understand that just like everybody else, we have lots of mistakes, just like Jacob has lots of mistakes. But our culture is our past. That's where we came from. That's who we are. We can change our character going forward. We cannot change our character in retrospect. So, go out there and defend your culture.